Welcome to another edition of AG Speaks. As promised previously, we have another guest speaker, or rather, excuse me, another guest on our show, Marty Robeson. And today we're going to talk about Originatics and a kiosk designed for use in various applications, and it's a pleasure to have Marty on today.
Thank you.
Yeah, Marty, as customary, what we typically do on the show before we kick it off is we always ask a general question. I always ask a general question of my guests, and the general question typically is, what was your first computer?
First computer, wow, it was a 286, and that's when we had Windows 3.0 at that time.
Wow, 286.
And our phone was with the big 5 1/4 disk, hard floppy disk, and it was great.
Wow, Windows 3.0, huh? Mm, 5 1/4 floppy, I remember those. Mm-hmm, I remember those. Yeah, so you get that 5 1/4 floppy thing. I don't even know when we stopped using those things, man. That was back in, like, gosh, 80, maybe it was 80-something, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's right around 85, 86 when we stopped using them.
Okay. And for the benefit of the listeners, full disclosure, Marty and I have worked together on a few projects in the past. We both kind of cut our teeth in this entrepreneurial game, so to speak, with a couple of projects. Gosh, we did the K-12 thing, what was that? With the LTSP project, you know, when we started messing with that.
Yes.
Back in 2003, I guess it was.
Yes, 2003.
And what else we do? Global Tech was a company that you and another one of our partners, Mark Savory, created, which got us the ability to get into the education arena. You know, like I said earlier, with the K-12. And with the thin client technology and what have you. We'll talk a little bit about that as it pertains to the kiosk that you're going to discuss today. And that's kind of how we met some years ago. And that was probably back in 2002, actually, when we first met, I think. 2001,
right.
2002. Yeah, so anyway,
right.
You're here today to talk about Originatic. Now, what is Originatic?
Well, Originatic is a technology development company. It's been in existence since 2005. We have several technologies that are currently under development, all with patents pending against the designs and technologies. And we have our first product. So we are eagerly awaiting our first product, which is going to come out 4th quarter of 2008. And the product has a dual mode. It will work as a kiosk and as a full PC. Just keeping true to tradition, that Originatic will focus on technologies that we plan to introduce to the market at a very fair price to allow everyone to benefit from them.
Okay. So what was the crust, or what was the impetus for Originatic? What made it become a reality? What was one of the things that made it happen?
Well, one of the things that really made it happen is the excuse me, the owner of the company, the chairman, Reno Smith, had an idea to increase the level of communication between tenants and some of his real estate holdings and him, and he came up with this idea to have a universal C that was mounted inside the apartment building, so that all the tenants had a way to communicate with him freely. That was the initial onset of getting the company off the ground. From there, several design concepts were put into place, and as we pushed forward, the design came into a reality at that point, and so now we have product. And then we have had several different spinoffs from the original technology that goes into other markets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one of the things that I was curious about as I looked at it, would you consider, I mean, I know you have the offerings. I mean, tell us about some of the offerings that Originatic has, and then we'll get into some of the questions I had about some of the products.
In terms of the other different
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Some of the other different offerings that we have, I mean, of course, we have the Universal Computer, which is our main product we are introducing to the market this year. Some of the other products that we will soon make available to the market, we do have a specific application that will be outfitted for automobiles along the same lines of Universal Computer technology and design. We have other applications, which is a energy distribution management system, which we're also working on currently right now, which will take advantage of solar power technology and things of that sort. That's something that we are hoping to bring to the market 2009-2010 time frame.
So that's more on the lines of a smart home, with the energy conservation or energy conservation type homes, where you have, like you mentioned, solar panel. You have heat pumps and things of that nature in the home, where you would actually have one central location panel that would actually drive the various services in your home.
That's true.
Okay. Okay. Well, that sounds very powerful. Sounds very powerful. I know that, you know, automation, home automation is something that may not be a household word, you know, no pun intended, for our listeners and things of that nature. And maybe you might want to elaborate a little bit on home automation, because that sounds like one of the efforts that you guys want to push forward going into the future.
Right. Well, with regards to home automation, I mean, one of the things that typically gets overlooked, or at least there's very little emphasis placed on it, is the management of the energy itself. There's no one centralized solution that is cost-effective.
Okay.
Currently, right now, there are various types of technologies out there, but the cost of the solution is very costly, so therefore the average person could not afford to have their own smart home with regards to energy management.
Okay. Okay.
And so one of the things that, you know, we're looking at is bringing the cost down and coming up with comparable products that can be installed in the home or in the business facility that will manage the energy distribution system and take advantage of the solar power, so that you can just reduce your total cost of ownership.
Okay. So from a cost perspective, what is it that sets, I guess, some of the hardware that you're proposing, you know, with the home automation package, the Ultimate PC? What are some of the things that set you guys off from, say, some of the other folks out there that have comparable hardware and things that need you? How are you able to cost low? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Basically, one of the things, definitely, the system itself is going to be a software-based system.
Mm-hmm.
So through software, we will be able to achieve much of the functionality that we're looking to take advantage of. I mean, the biggest benefit to from a consumer perspective, you know, buildings of all types, because we're not going to limit ourselves. So buildings of all types of apartment buildings, condominiums, hotels, even manufacturing plant facilities. And our plan is to also make the system network accessible so that it has a real friendly graphical user interface so that you can access the data. Sensors are going to be used with this software-based system, and the technology for sensors at this point has really come down in price to the point where it is extremely affordable. The average sensor, depending on what you're trying to read, ranges anywhere from $15 to $100. It just depends on how elaborate you want your sensor to be. So a lot of this will be sensor-generated data to be coupled to our software package. And so ideally what we're looking at is a miniature server that would be placed in the home with sensors that would be connected to various types of heat pumps and solar panels. And with the functionality of software, we will manage your energy distribution throughout your facility.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this question. How did you guys go about determining your feature set and your hardware? Was it something that you did with some sort of customer focus groups that said, hey, you know, this is what we really want to have in a piece of hardware for this type of functionality, you know, for home automation or otherwise? Or did you guys just go out and find the best of the best in your own benchmarking strategies to come up with the hardware that you thought would be appropriate, more robust for this type of solution?
Well, we're trying to create a bridge between all of our products.
Okay.
And so from the perspective of introducing our universal PC, that's kind of phase one of our strategy. That allows us to have a centralized computing unit in the facility. And then as we progress forward with our facility management system, the system itself can be installed and onto the universal PC, and then at that point we can proceed with the interface to the hardware. As far as how we came about it's kind of a mix. We took a look at what systems are available, took into account cost, price, maintenance. We talked to a lot of different people, those who have smart type homes. And then also just looking out there and seeing, okay, who has a different spin on this? How can we do this better? How can we make it affordable and reliable?
Now, who would you say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but who would you say, because this space is pretty, it's fairly new, I mean, fairly nascent, I mean, who would you say would be some of the major competitors in this space right now? People that you could actually benchmark, or people that you could say, you know, have some market share?
It varies. I mean, there are many high-end companies that are kind of pushing this from the home build perspective. It's kind of broken up into many different parts. So, you know, there are a couple of companies who have all-in-one type solutions. But right now, in terms of competitive market space, there's not a lot of competition only because of cost of implementation.
Right, right.
And so for things that do exist, they're not really feeling a lot of pressure from competition at this point in time.
Yeah, because it's fairly new. I mean, I've always love the X10, you know, application, or the X10 hardware. You know, they basically do surveillance, you know, with the little wireless cameras that you could use to pipe data to, you know, a server somewhere on your premises, which is kind of cool.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's kind of pretty much that's my extent of home automation that I've seen, you know, using those type of facilities. Now, let's talk a little about what's under the hood. Of course, you know, we are talking about keeping costs low and affordable, and using a very extensible platform to power your offerings. You know, the Ultimate PC, and as well as as well as your home automation package. Now, before I get there, I did want to ask, just for the benefit of listeners, I mean, when I look at the Ultimate PC, it looks a lot like a kiosk, right? I mean, would you consider it a kiosk, or would you consider it something more than a kiosk?
Well, it's more than a kiosk. And like I said, this is the major emphasis for the company right now. It's an all-in-one PC, and it comes loaded with features. For us, we are kind of in a very unique situation where we have a key advantage over the competition, of which we see the universal PC. You look at the design, it's all in one, fully integrated keyboard. This is one of the unique selling features, in addition to the fact that the unit can be mounted directly onto the wall. And not many people can actually say that about their device. In fact, the only other device that can be mounted to the wall is a device that is sold by Sony. But of course, it does not share our form factor. And so therefore, it doesn't really allow it to play in some of the markets that we intend to capture. The PC, Universal PC, can work in two modes. For those who are simply looking for a kiosk, then we can put it into kiosk mode. If you're looking for more functionality than a kiosk, more peripherals and options, then we can go into a full PC mode. It just depends on the interest and the requirements of the user.
All right. Now, for the benefit of the listeners, explain what a kiosk is, just on a high level.
Well, the kiosk, from our definition, is this is a unit that's going to allow you to do some basic functionality with regards to communications, right? Mm-hmm. And so the average kiosk that you would see in most places like airports, things of that nature, it gives you the ability to get online, surf for information, check your email, things like that. And so the possibilities of what you can do with the kiosk are endless.
Okay.
The kiosk is primarily used for communication.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And something that is controlled, when I say controlled, I'm talking about limiting the access that you have to the operating system from the user interface, so that you can pretty much modularize the experience and control what it is that the user can do as they sit down at the terminal, so that you don't have to repurpose the machine each time that it's someone sits down and logs into it, or someone sits down to run an application itself, so that, for instance, data can't be saved to the disk or nothing, the user directory can't be modified, things of that nature. So you get a very generic experience.
Absolutely.
Okay, gotcha. So let's talk a little about the operating system.
Right, very interesting. Now, the operating system, our key thing was that other than Windows, we felt it was an absolute must that Linux performs on this machine. As you know, Alfred, I'm a Linux man. So this was, and since I kind of controlled the design and the specifications of the Universal PC, that was the first thing that I sought out, is to make sure that whatever peripherals that we add in terms of components, they were all compatible with Linux. So from an operating system perspective, we will be offering, in addition to a Windows operating system, Linux will also be offered. Now, we're going to go with Ubuntu Linux, as it is one of the most prevalent OSs out there, and try to follow suit in terms of what Dell is trying to do with regards to making Linux available on PC. So we're gonna follow that same pattern.
Now, I've got to say, this, as I looked at the website, you got to get after your marketing people. It was one of the things that got me initially was it was a little over the top with the flash. I think it made it difficult to navigate the site, you know, just by browsing it. And then the other thing I noticed is that they didn't show any of the products with any Linux, content. I mean, it was all Windows. I was like, okay, got to tell Marty about that one.
Yeah. In fact, there's some changes that we are going to be making to the site that are going to happen quite rapidly. But we certainly want to make sure that you pull down the spec. There's a specification that can be pulled down.
Okay.
When you look at it, it will say, in terms of operating systems, Windows and Linux.
Okay. Yeah, because that was the first thing I noticed, was I saw that other operating system, and the Flash was made a little difficult for me to navigate easily, to find out, look at the specs and look at the hardware and, you know, look at the overall. And it could have been my browser that I use, because I don't use the other stuff, you know. So, okay, well, cool. So you got the operating system in place. Now, you know, we're talking about an embedded OS here is what you're talking about, essentially. And you're looking for a way to kind of get the same experience that you would get using the Linux Terminal Server project, right? Well, using the strength of possibly a server that has all the applications you need, robustly configured from a memory standpoint, from things of that nature, and then you're going to use a fast pipe to get the information over to the device. Now, how far have you got with that sort of work yet? Because is that the direction you're going, or am I off base here?
Well, there's a couple of different directions. If you're looking at using the device as a kiosk or in the thin client market, then I think at this point it's already adequately set up to take advantage of LTSP, and you'd be good to go. From a kiosk perspective, that's when you would look at embedded operating systems, and right now we are pushing forward to finalizing specifications that we require for an embedded Linux OS to make sure we have the right applications that are typically used by most Linux users and just users in general. And then there's an embedded XP version. Outside of the kiosk, when you go to the full PC version, then it's going to be a full operating system, which will be either a Windows XP or Ubuntu Linux or Vista, if requested. But the default.
I was going to say, good luck with that. Go ahead, sorry.
One of the things that we felt is that just with some of the different issues that, you know, we've seen and that I've experienced personally with Vista, it's not something that, unless you actually ask for it, it won't come standard.
Okay.
You know, it's either going to be Linux, Ubuntu Linux, or it's going to be Windows XP.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted to ask also is the idea of booting from you know, either a solid state device or booting from, you know, your traditional SATA hard drive. Now what sort of stuff is under the hood there? You guys, I know, you know, solid state devices are extremely cost prohibitive right now. I don't know if that's the right direction you guys want to go in the future, or, you know, talk a little bit about what's under the hood.
Well, under the hood, right. Under the hood, let's start with the processor, because that's kind of core for everyone in terms of making a decision on, you know, how they're going to go. Well, we originally started off with a VIA microprocessor, right? Because we were on this concept of, let's get to the path of green computing, ultra low with regards to power consumption. But then when we went to the 2008 CES show, we got a lot of positive feedback from many people that stopped by the booth. And so in our redesign, we swapped out the VIA microprocessor and we went with the Intel Pentium processor.
Okay.
Which now we have four choices for the user. You know, we have the Pentium dual core, we have the Core 2 Duo, we got the Core Duo, and the Celeron processors in terms of processing power. There's going to be onboard graphics, which is Intel graphics chip, 128 MB RAM. Memory will range from 1 to 4 gigs max. Hard drives will be serial ATA. We looked at the solid state, but like you said, the cost of solid state is just too excessive at this point. And if we use that in the design, it would make the the universal PC just wouldn't really be affordable for the average user. So that's not something that we're looking at until those prices actually start to come down. Uh-huh. Now, in terms of the size of the hard drive, the default is 250 gigs. And then there are two additional options for 500 gig and 1 terabyte.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is...
The unit will come... Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, the unit will also come with a trayless slot-loading DVD-RW. There's a built-in webcam, which at this point, the default is 1.3 megapixel, but it can be swapped out with two additional changes, one of which would be a 3 megapixel, and then we shoot go up from 3 to 8 megapixel camera, which is also adjustable. There's an option for a built-in TV tuner with remote and DVB. The unit will come with either wired 1 gigabyte wired Ethernet, or there's a mini PCI 802.11 A, B, and G. Now that's one of the unique factors, because this we actually made this selection just based on feedback from many people that came by the booth. Originally we had just the regular wireless, but then we found there's a key advantage if we elect to go with a mini PCI slot. Therefore, those clients who would like to be a little bit more mobile, like as an example, marketing companies who do the typical marketing research, they want to walk around to different locations with their device. And so with the mini PCI slot, now we can accommodate Sprint, AT&T, and Verizon broadband cards, giving them that level of mobility by which they don't have to struggle to interface into a network, an existing networking system, you know, where they plan to do their marketing survey. Uh-huh. The unit will also come equipped with Bluetooth 2.0. We talked about the operating system. And still under development, we're looking at a lithium-ion battery, which is primarily going to be used in the event that there's a power loss.
Right. Now, I'm looking at the site now, and I was just wondering, do you have for the UC or the Ultimate Computer, or I'm sorry, Universal Computer, excuse me, does it talk about weight on here? Because I'm looking for the specs, and you're talking about walking around with the device.
Let me clear that up. The device is not meant to walk around, but when I say walk around from a marketing perspective, you know, because we'll have an optional floor stand that has the standard VESA mount, which is used on flat-screen television, so that they can be more mobile from that perspective. But certainly, it's not something that you're going to carry around like a laptop. It's just there is a unique level of mobility by which you can install the unit in your facility.
Okay, because so you would have on the peripheral side, you would have a CD-ROM or DVD writer on this guy. You've got your flip-down keyboard, so you can actually package this thing in places where space is very at a premium. And
absolutely,
you know, you have a very large display, which I can see from here, a very big display, and you got speakers around there somewhere on the side, or speakers embedded into the keyboard. Okay. Okay. Now, what about, you know, booting from Flash? Let's say, for instance, you know, I've got an operating system that I've packaged. Say I've got damn small Linux, or I've got something like that, or I've got, you know, Puppy Linux or something, you know, Slax or whatever it is on a flash drive, and I want to boot the device from a flash drive. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's possible. That's a configuration that will be made in the BIOS that you want to boot from a USB device, and at that point, you're good to go.
Okay. So as a customer, I'm not beholden to Originatic, you know, in terms of what it is that you guys might provide out the box. There's no lockdown anywhere in there where, you know, I'm prohibited to or prevented from using my own solution in terms of software.
No. We don't really see the need to lock anybody down. Our intent is to allow everyone to fully exploit the capability of the device. I think if it's once it's deployed in certain public sectors, of course, then what you're able to do is determined by, you know, the facility owner. But from our perspective, any and every opportunity with regards to using various technologies, we fully intend to allow that to be usable by the public at large.
All right. So essentially, the device is hackable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the need to lock it down. I mean, then if you start locking it down, you take away capabilities, and then the interest in the device starts to diminish.
Exactly, exactly. It makes a lot of sense. So what are we looking at here? I don't see pricing and such for these here. Are you at liberty to discuss that?
Yes, I am ready to discuss that. One of the things I want to add, too, is that, you know, during our redesign, what you see on our website is our in red is our prototype that we took to the CES show. It was based on a 17-inch LCD. We have since then increased that to a 19-inch wide.
Okay.
Okay. One of the other options that I didn't mention is that there's also an option for touchscreen.
Okay.
So you'll have touchscreen capability as well, in addition to the 19-inch wide. The design is also based off of IP54, which means that it is dustproof and spill-proof. That's one of the big concerns when you create a device that's going to be in the public sector. So
exactly.
From a commercial standpoint, the keyboard will be a stainless steel keyboard with a stainless steel trackball option, so that it can hold up to some of the rigor of a public use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the dust, so it's dust and protect you from dust and things of that nature.
Yes.
Now I'm looking at the side of the device here. You know, one of the photos it shows like it looks like a port. Is that like a USB port on the side of the red device?
Yes, absolutely. There's going to be four USB ports. There's going to be a microphone in, audio out, the DVD, of course. There's going to be a 4-in-1 card reader,
mm-hmm.
That's going to be there as well. And some of the things that you see currently on the website, like the multimedia function buttons and various LEDs on the front, all of that's gone now because we want a nice, clean face. So when we do update the website with the final design that's being released later this year, we still kept our form, but we just took some things off the front just to keep the front nice and clean, to keep that nice look.
Yeah, it does have a very sleek looking. It does have a very sleek looking design, a very clean interface.
Yeah, certainly that's our key is keep it clean. Certainly the design itself has gotten a lot of attention. In fact, we had people that came to the booth at CES, and they just told us this is the next generation kiosk. And
I'm sorry, I was going to ask you a question. Didn't interrupt you. What I wanted to ask also is invariably when you're talking about Linux, for instance, or any other free operating system, your free open source operating system, we get into conversations with hardware vendors that aren't always to our benefit. In other words, we have problems where hardware vendors refuse to open the specs on the device so that it will work and play nice with Linux so that you can actually have the same or similar user type experience as you do with some proprietary OSs in the market today. Where you stand with your tier two suppliers in terms of allowing people to actually see the specs, or at least allowing you guys to understand the specs to the point where any Linux distribution you put on there, or particularly like you said Ubuntu, will work and play nice with all the devices you have. Because I know, for instance, you know those 4-in-1 card readers, it sometimes takes patches to the kernel to get them to work properly. Are you guys going to provide that type of support? Or at least, you know, stand behind the product and say, look, we've got Ubuntu, it's been tested, it's been burned out, we know it will work well, and every peripheral on this thing will work as expected.
it's kind of twofold. With regards to the components and its integration with Linux, that was one of the things that we did a lot of testing on. Now, with the smart card reader, we will make available the actual specifications to the unit if requested.
Okay.
Okay, so that's not going to be a hidden agenda. In terms of, you know, support from our suppliers, I don't think that won't be a problem as well. In fact, the suppliers that we are dealing with right now, the driver set that they make available for this unit, if individuals who request it because they, you know, maybe you want to put a wrapper around it so that you can incorporate it into Linux so that it works seamlessly,
mm-hmm.
we'll get that out. You know, we'll do so at the request of the public. But there will be many of the drivers. Our plan and our intent is to put the drivers for everything that's in the unit onto the Restore CD.
Okay.
So therefore, you shouldn't have to go out and struggle to try to find a similar driver. The driver will be there. And as we move forward and we strengthen our relationships with our suppliers, then we will keep driving them with regards to make sure that the same driver availability for Windows-based operating systems, that same courtesy is extended to the Linux community as well.
Exactly, and I think that's important because, you know, oftentimes we have, you know, people who are new to the community, the Linux community in general, or at least new to the operating system. They typically struggle with driver support. I mean, not typically. I'm saying when they have some of the more exotic hardware where some of the vendors are not necessarily apt to releasing, you know, the information. Like, you know, you have the struggles with the graphics cards in some cases. Or, you know, in the 401 card reader, like E&E was one of the companies that I, on my notebook computer, that the one I recently purchased with, for instance, the Aspire, you know, that I have now from Acer. It wasn't until I upgraded the actual kernel that I was able to get out of the box support for that card reader. So those are the little knickknacks that would kind of somehow deter and prevent us from actually getting the market share we need, and at least getting more people to actually try and use the operating system. And in terms of what you're doing here, you want widespread support from as many customers as possible. And
exactly.
Especially since you already have, you know, a good vendor support base on the Windows side, you know, it would seem that they would be interested in writing, you know, the appropriate drivers, or at least providing a way to allow those peripherals to work on the other operating system as well, you know, on Linux as well. So, you know, that's something to think about, and figure that would be something that people would be interested in as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you enjoyed CES. I take it you went out there and you spent some time. I've yet to go out to the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. I pretty much capture all of the experience through Engadget and sites like that. But
right,
you know. So, but you got a lot out of the trip, I gather. A lot of press and attention.
Absolutely. In fact, first of all, I just say, just for everyone, if you have not experienced CES, you owe it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You really do owe it to yourself because it was phenomenal. There are products that are there that you may not ever see anywhere, but they're there, and it kind of gives you an idea with regards to where we're going in the future with regards to technology. I mean, so it's so vast. So you definitely owe it to yourself. As far as our experience from the perspective of the Universal PC, it was overwhelming. Overwhelming. The first day that we were getting the booth set up, we were falling behind a little bit just trying to get some last minute things going, and you know, the first visitor at our booth was Microsoft. Because if you're a new vendor with a new product, they put you in a specific building. So we were at the at the Sands Convention Center, and everybody that has a new product is there. And so as soon as the conference was open, Microsoft was at our booth, and our prototype had not yet arrived. And they were wondering, okay, where is it? Because we want to see it. And we said, well, can you come back in an hour? Because it'll be here. Just due to traffic, one of the team members had not yet gotten through the traffic. 1 hour later, Microsoft was back, and at that time, we had the prototype mounted on the wall for his view. And, you know, I think the biggest thing from your perspective is the first thing came out of his mouth is, okay, so why don't you have Vista on there? And so that became a topic of discussion. You know, he seemed to be, a little bit concerned of why don't you have Vista. And of course, I got to be honest. I had to be honest with him. I said, look, first of all, when we were in our development stages, Vista wasn't even ready. And then on top of that, the cost to implement Vista would have been, I got to go with high-end peripherals. And at that time, we just wasn't interested in that concept. You know, we want to make the device affordable and usable. And so, they were like, okay, what about now? And I said, well, it's something that we can talk about. But certainly right now, the public at large is real happy with XP and they're real happy with Linux, and that's the direction that we're taking. But, we don't rule anything out. It's just that you got to bring to the table a solution that we can incorporate that makes sense. And so it was a good conversation. And then soon after they left the booth, Google came to the booth. That created a lot of excitement, for us at Originatic, because Google came to the booth and they were very, very direct. Like, hey, I understand you have a very new product. I want to see it. Looked at the product. He grabbed a handful of our brochures and took a lot of pictures of the unit and told us, we will get back with you. Stay tuned. So that generated a lot of excitement to see that a company as large as Google, they're there, and they are focusing on the Originatic Universal Computer as a product of interest. Mm-hmm. And so we had a lot of major OEMs, because Hewlett-Packard came through, Intel came through. Everybody came to look at our device, and at that point, that's when it dawned on us that we have such a unique form factor and a unique product that we're actually drawing out those large OEMs who ordinarily probably would never even look our way with regards to even considering our product, let alone coming to look at it. So we were very excited. And after that, everyone that was there hit our booth. There was just no real time to sit down and relax, because we were doing the demonstrations and we were talking to people about the various offerings. And then it also gave us an opportunity to kind of narrow out what's going to be an acceptable price, because we still yet did not know what we were going to charge. And so when we came up with a strategy, there were six of us, and so we divided up the numbers, and we had some people indicating, yeah, we're looking at the 4,000 to 5,000 range, and a few were talking to 3,000 to 4,000, and then a few were talking 2,000 to 3,000, and then we just kind of got a general consensus. And then after the first day, we said, okay, $3,800 is the price. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of response. We even got a lot of people who signed letters of intent to purchase, and so it was great. After the show was over, because it was a four-day event, when the show was over, we had enough time to regroup, gather our thoughts, look at all the notes that we had taken from. We had well over 8,000 to 10,000 people visit us at the booth, because we were able to scan their conference ID badges. And so we took all that information and we went back to the drawing board. We took into account of some of the components and features and functionalities that we didn't have. We rolled that into the design, and we were able to bring the price down. So now there are two prices, because we have a commercial version and we have a consumer version. The commercial version is $25.99, and the consumer version is $19.99. And that was important to us because when you look at something like the universal computer and look at other types of devices that are in its class, that kind of keeps us in the same price range. And so now it becomes more of a competitive market because we're fully integrated versus our competitors at this point. Yes, it was a lot of fun.
Well, you know what? I'm looking at the specs here, you know, it's very impressive. I pulled down the PDF file that was attached to the spec sheet, has the spec sheet on the PDF. It shows that it's actually HD compatible, high definition compatible. And I'm not really sure what the dimensions of the screen are going to be, but let's see, is it on here? I'm sorry, go ahead. I see it. Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. The dimensions, it's 19 inch. It's 19 by 22.
Okay.
And so the aspect ratio is 16 by 3, I believe. So it's fully compatible with widescreen capability. And again, we thought long and hard about what to offer the consumer and the commercial markets. And right now, 19-inch wide touchscreen capability is an absolute must at this point because we kind of see our device as next-generation home appliance from a consumer standpoint.
Right.
And we kind of see that the kitchen is the nucleus in all homes around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So our vision is that from a consumer perspective, consumers would purchase the universal computer, this would be mounted into the kitchen, and at that point, the possibilities of uses are endless.
Right. Well, I'm sorry.
And then, from an HD perspective, I mean, you're right. It does have the capability for HD interface and its dual channel audio support, so that you could literally have two different audio ports plugged up for two different sets of speakers and things of that nature.
Right, because what immediately comes to mind, for me at least, and for my selfish needs, would be a nice LCD or a nice, you know, panel that I could use for my MythBox. So I want to watch movies on high definition, and I'm too poor to go out and buy a a 40-inch screen or whatever it is, LCD or plasma type monitor or whatever it is. I can use one of these guys, and you know, it already has. One thing I don't see is FireWire, though, as an interface, and I'm sure that wouldn't be hard to add if you don't have it. But say again?
Yeah, FireWire. I mean, we looked at that, and, you know, we had to go by, you know, where that general use is, mm-hmm. mainly a lot in the Mac community.
Sure.
As we did try to incorporate Mac as one of the operating systems, but we weren't able to get there yet. So there is no FireWire, but definitely one of the future considerations that we're looking at is the mini USB port.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at things like that. But with regards to, you know, overall display, I mean, you have many different modes because it has the component S video and composite outputs so that you could have VGA, HDTV or TV or GA LVDS or LVDS plus HDTV or TV. And then also from a resolution perspective, it will give you 1080i or 1080p resolution.
Yeah, because you could just simply, if I'm correct, let me know if I'm wrong about this, but couldn't you just use the display if you wanted to and bypass the operating system and, you know, not booting it up, obviously, and just use the display and pipe some other audio and video to it from another server if you wanted to?
Yes. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah.
Also, it does have an additional VGA port so that you could do a dual screen situation if you wanted to as well.
Wow. Okay. That's powerful. That really is powerful. And, of course, you got the gigabit Ethernet connected to it, so this is pretty slick device here. Pretty slick device. Now, one of the questions I had also was this idea of, you mentioned there's two different prices, commercial and consumer price. Now, I know I think you had mentioned before when we spoke offline was that you guys are doing a lot of your manufacturing overseas to kind of take advantage of the cost structure there and the benefit and benefits of economies of scale. Now, would you also think that over time, once you get some market interest and you start getting some I guess more diverse, if you will, competitive bids for hardware support and manufacturing support, and you get the economies of scale you need, would you see the price coming down off of what you have now?
Yeah, we do see that. In fact, one of the things that we had already discussed with our manufacturing partner is that at what point can we expect to be able to pull the price down so that it's even more affordable to the client base. But the one thing you got to take into consideration is that we felt it was absolutely necessary to have the IP54 rating. That's something that's very important.
What is that?
And,
what is the IP54?
IP54 is a NEMA rating with regards to dustproof and spillproof capability. And, you know, without that, I'm quite certain that the price would be even lower. But we didn't just want to come out with just your standard run-of-the-mill type of device. We want to make sure that regardless of where you put it, it's not in jeopardy with regards to having dust or someone spilling pop on it, destroying the unit. And so we had to make sure it was extremely robust, and the fact that there's a stainless steel keyboard. So some of those elements over time, the prices will come down just because of, you know, volume of how we're buying components. Mm-hmm. So I do see, you know, over a period of time where price would be able to come down and our consumers would be able to take advantage of that.
Powerful. I would suspect that there would be some other questions that others would have regarding codecs. That's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. You know, I see this as possibly being a multimedia center or hub for the house in terms of how you would, you know, use it. I mean, you've got this nice size display. I mean, 22 inch aspect ratio. What did you say was what was the aspect ratio?
The aspect ratio, it's like 16:3 based off a 19 inch wide.
Okay.
And so you're gonna have a 19 inch wide screen, and you're right. I mean, if they elect to get all of the options to turn this into a entertainment all in one solution, it comes in with a built-in TV tuner and DVB with a remote control. So absolutely, they would be able to play DVDs and movies of all types.
Right, and it's HDTV high definition television resolution capable, but there's no HD tuner in it or anything like that. No tuner card per se, but that's okay because you could. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. There's no HD tuner card, but it is capable. And so in terms of the HD tuner card, at that point, the cheaper solution would be to incorporate an external device through the USB.
Exactly. And then, you know, like I said, that's where the strength of MIF TV comes in. If you're running a MIF TV media server, you can simply pipe your data to the display, which is what I would most likely do. You know, just pipe it to the display, and then you could drive it that way, and then you could, you know, set that up any way you want. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, and it comes with the wall mounts. But let me ask you this though: now, for those that are looking at this as a kiosk solution, how are you going to deal with the codec issue? You know, when you talk about, because obviously, there is the whole idea of playing unfree codecs. You know, things like You're gonna use stuff like MP3s, or you're gonna use stuff like the Windows Media video audio files. You know, those unfree codecs. How are you guys gonna get over that particular hurdle?
Well, one of the things, I mean, I guess that's one of the luxuries of using a standardized Linux distribution, you know, speaking from a Linux perspective, much of that has already been resolved to some extent. Our plan is from a codec perspective, our plan is, I mean, we're looking at some of the Linux options like Caffeine and VLC and things like that.
Sure.
What we will do without violating, you know, patent and copyright law is that we will put the necessary software there, and then we're going to try to, you know, have some sort of arrangement by which, you know, we can get that. Although from the Linux perspective, typically at this point, what many of us do is, you know, we go and get that extra free codec, that the surrogate package that has been created, made available. But if we can't get an agreement that we can freely install it, at least we will have all of the necessary software there ready to support. And then it's just an issue of going to the correct repository to get that codec.
Sure.
But certainly we want to make it so that you'll be able to run VLC or Caffeine or any of those players. The two prevalent ones that I would think that most people would want to use would either be Caffeine or VLC. At least those are my two choices that seem to work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be something that will be put on the OS by default.
Okay. Now that sounds very cool. I do like the fact that you guys have made the decision to use an open platform, or at least an open platform approach. And of course, you use the FOSS approach for your operating system to accompany, you know, that gets the stream of people that would be interested in running the other operating system on there. And you have this setup here, which is very elegant. Now, you also, what I'll do is I'll add in the show notes, I'll add the content from, I think you had sent me something with YouTube that you guys did on the floor of CES. And I'll have to add that to the show notes and some of the things we talked about today on the hardware, of course, the link to the Originatic website. But yeah, talk to your marketing people, get them to do something about the site, man. At least somewhere. I know if you look in the spread in the spec sheet, it talks about, you know, Ubuntu Linux, but if you look at all of the pictures that are on the site for the different device, they've got Windows on there.
right. Well, you know, it's one of those things that when we do change up. Right now, we haven't updated the website with the new release, and that's because we had submitted several additional patents.
Oh, I see.
And so we were holding off until we get the website. I guarantee you that what you will see if we update the website will be several pictures, one with Windows, one with Linux.
Okay.
So you'll see the penguin in the screen, just so people know, just by glance, that we do have the unit set where it will accommodate Linux, and just so that they know it's Linux friendly.
Absolutely, because you gotta have Tux on there, man. Otherwise, you know, people might get the wrong idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, definitely, yeah, and you're right, and definitely, like I said, we want to try to have it set up so that we'll have the typical standard load regards to Linux. There'll be some things that we'll just go through and we'll have it installed as part of the standard load, and so there'll be some level of custom configuration with regards to like the operating system. Just some of the basic things we want to make sure is just there by default.
Mm-hmm.
For both operating systems. And we're looking forward to it. I mean, we're really excited at this point and we really want to get a lot of feedback from the Linux community. So, you know, that's why I'm going out of my way to make sure that, you know, I can accommodate the majority of functionality that I know the average Linux users, such as yourself, are going to require. You know, still got the hardcore Slackware individuals that are out there kind of want to do everything themselves, and that's wonderful. You know, I think it's great. So we're really going out of our way to make sure that the driver support, the open platform, and just to allow you to do whatever you want. I mean, once you purchase it, you do what you want, and we don't want to limit you. Right. You know, so look forward to seeing devices, because some of the markets, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that, some of the markets that we're targeting are retail markets, food service, airports, public facilities of all types, education, medical. We're going after everything and everybody at this point.
Okay.
So, you know, you can expect to see definitely. One of the other cool things that we haven't got a chance to talk about, if you're looking at the website, we give you the option to get the faceplate in any color that you want.
Okay.
Okay, there's going to be the 5 to 8 basic colors, red, black, blue, green, yellow, orange. Those will be the basic colors, and then if you got a very unique design, you want to put a logo, you want to put your daughter's picture on that, then we have a skins manufacturer in Canada who can basically put whatever you want. They have a nice skin, which is a 3M derivative, so it's kind of like a magnetic type skin.
Uh-huh.
It's not expensive, so it doesn't put a sticky applique type mess on front of the face. It's removable. And so therefore, you can kind of have like seasonal type themes and things of that nature. So we're trying to make this a very user friendly, interchangeable type device as well.
Okay. Well, one other last question I want to ask you before we wrap this segment up. I wanted to ask you about support, because inevitably you got, you know, people that would be new to the device or whatever in general, you know, whether it be your Windows customers or whether it be your Linux customers. How are you going to be handling support? Because I know you want to reach the U.S. market, of course, and you've got, you know, your manufacturing team overseas, majority of it, if I'm not mistaken. How are you going to handle support for that, for the device, as you roll it out?
Okay. Support, that's a good question. Here's our concept. What we don't want is a potential customer or a customer to feel slighted in any way with regards to support. So what we found that was mandatory for especially all of our U.S.-based customers, and this is going to pretty much be across the board for those customers who purchase around the world, our plan is to have a next-day on-site service.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're not going to go with the depot-type maintenance, put the unit back in the box, and now you have nothing. That's not our plan. Our plan is that where you are, we come.
Okay.
That's the plan. Okay? And so, you know, we're looking at a 9 to 5 next business day on-site service plan. There are going to be 2 additional extended service plans where you can get 1, 2, or 3 years, and then there's a premium 24/7, 365 on-site service plan, which we're still trying to develop what that pricing is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's next day on-site. So if you buy the unit, you live in Oklahoma, and for whatever reason, there wasn't a very good experience with regards to shipping, and so the unit came damaged at some point. Or it's an issue where you have it and say something happens. Then we will have a service technician will come to your home, and basically the way we're looking at it, if it was something that he can fix in 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
when he takes the unit, he leaves the unit.
Okay.
So therefore, you're never going to be without. He'll take it back to the shop, make the necessary corrections, come back out to your facility, okay, and then put your original unit back in place.
Oh, so in other words, you're talking about on-site repair, so they're going to be there to repair it on site and never take the device out of the area or out of the facility.
Right. Unless it's something catastrophic, our perspective is there should be no need to take it out of the home, out of the facility. Unless it was something where, you know, maybe you had a damaged LCD screen or something like that. If something catastrophic, then we take it out of the facility. But when we leave with it, we'll always leave a replacement. So one of the general rules of thumb is that if we have to leave your facility or your home with it, then we will take your hard drive out and put it in the loaner. So therefore, you still have all your original data. We go back to the shop, we make the necessary correction, and then we come back out.
Mm. So you guys are going to actually have to have an army of service people to be dropped at any given
Absolutely.
Time.
Well, we actually have a national service supplier, so they're in every state in the United States, and they plan to be in every country that we're going to sell a device to. So they're going to be making relationships to make sure that, you know, those countries abroad, UK, Asia, and places like that, that you have that support. So it's just absolutely imperative that, you know, that we go that way. One other thing I didn't mention to you, in addition to the unit being able to be mounted on the wall, it does have a stand
okay.
that will allow it to freely stand up on the desktop as well.
Okay. Well, that's key because, I mean, like I said, you know, you have this long tail effect that will occur once you start getting this product on the street. And that's another thing we didn't talk about. When is it going to be on the street? But we'll get to that. When you start putting a product on the street, you know, you're going to have people using things that you might not have imagined for. You know what I'm saying? You never can anticipate what the customer will do with your product. It's one of the things that we know in product development, as you are well aware. And, you know, that's something that you have to consider. But when is this going to be on the street? I'm sorry, go ahead. I mean,
well, yeah, and you're right. And we tried to imagine how they would use it, and it's also going to be based on the level of functionality that they can get out of the device. But sure, you know, people are very imaginative, so you know, our plan is to support it, and you know, it's pretty much going to be on a case-by-case basis depending on, you know, what we encounter, you know, from a service perspective. But our plan is we're sticking behind our product, and that's the bottom line.
Right, so you'll of course be able to do over the phone, I guess, support, you know, for simple stuff like, well, you know, if somebody says something's wrong with the operating system, you know, or they can't run it, the operating system crashed, I mean, or something like that. I mean, that's another aspect of support that you guys are probably going to be faced with. What are your plans to address that particular concern?
Our plans is, regardless of what questions the customer has, mm-hmm. if it's a how-to, I don't know how to do this, mm-hmm. operating system has a problem, whatever the question is, it will get addressed.
Right, so you can do some of that with a wiki. It's something simple, right? You can just throw...
Well, there will be a wiki, but there's going to be a live 24-hour phone support. Mm-hmm. And based on that support, if your issue couldn't get resolved over the phone, then a technician is dispatched.
Okay. Understand.
Next day.
Understand that. Now, one last question for you. When will this be on the street, or is it already on the street?
Well, many of our engineering units are on the street with various commercial clients that are doing on-site demonstrations. We are finalizing our production run, so I am going to be taking off to go to Taiwan June 6th through the 13th for our production run. And the plan is to release the device for fourth quarter of 2008. So it will be released in there. So we'll have it out in time to purchase before Christmas.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. So that's only a few short months. I'm looking forward to seeing it on the street, and I'd like to get my hands on one of those myself. I'd be happy to continue the beta testing for you.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Marty, for joining us today and sharing information on Originatic. Certainly, I think that a lot of people will be interested in this. A lot of the listeners would be happy to give you some more feedback on this. And, of course, if you have comments that you want to send regarding this particular show, as always, feel free to send those comments to agspeaks@gmail.com. It'll be a voice comment, that is, agspeaks@gmail.com. And, of course, you can hit the blog with any comments you might have on any episode that we have published in the past. And I also have a SIP URI that you can use now, and it's been available for a while, just never announced it. That would be agreen@akiga.net. So I do have a SIP URI that you can use now, since we're running this particular conversation through my very powerful home PBX, Asterisk PBX. So anyway, it's been a pleasure, Marty, and we will talk again soon, of course.
Excellent.
All right, buddy.